Welcome to the Unmuted Podcast from Los Angeles. I'm Jay Mariotti. Never usually means never, especially when a boorish despot orders never to be used in capital letters. I'm quoting, "We'll never change the name. It's that simple. Never. You can use caps." End quote. Daniel Snyder said, what, 7 years ago? Referring to the nickname of his NFL team, the Redskins. But the outrage and flames of the year 2020 have melted away, never, even in the once intractable domain of contentious sports names. As President Trump continues to flout tensions that could make America explode again, Snyder represents a very unlikely source of, dare we say, hope? Daniel Snyder? Hope? Wonders be, the NFL's Washington franchise finally is changing its nickname. The new name is rumored to be Warriors, which might not be the best of ideas either, in that the name has been associated with racial insensitivity. Warriors, once considered offensive to American Indians, causing Marquette University to change its nickname to Golden Eagles in 1994. It's also not very original in sports. It has been in the NBA for decades and currently belongs to Stephen Curry and a team in San Francisco. Hopefully, Dan Snyder will get it right this time. If he always will be a rogue for waiting so damn long for this, at least Snyder came down from his high horse to bring us the day we never thought would come.
This is the Pandemic Proof Podcast with Jay Mariotti, an actual journalist who covered the Bay Area earthquake long after a World Series was postponed and a 9/11 successfully demanded to keep hosting his national radio show when an advertising boss wanted to switch to network programming. Did you really think Jay ever would stick to sports during a global health crisis? Now, here's Jay Mariotti.
If 2020 is the most disruptive and potentially devastating year of our lives, this also is the year when sports attacked hatred with a purpose not previously evident. The George Floyd horror itself might not have penetrated Dan Snyder's closed mind, but it did terrify millions who do business with FedEx, the title sponsor of the Redskins Stadium, and other prominent partners such as Nike and Pepsi. The shrinking of never is a simple equation. Consumers complain, CEOs react, and pressure is applied on Snyder to either change the name or lose those companies as backers. And unlike 2013, when Snyder made that flip comment to USA Today and prompted this response from then-President Barack Obama, quote, "If I were the owner of the team and I knew that there was a name on my team, even if it had a storied history that was offending a sizable group of people, I'd think about changing," end quote, Obama. The new pressures aren't as political as they are financial. To avoid a mass corporate boycott of his team and to possibly land a new stadium with a lucrative sponsorship at the old RFK Stadium site in D.C., Snyder had to bury a nickname that is insulting to Native American culture and belongs nowhere near any respectful 21st century context. All walls will not be toppled, of course. Still, eyes have been opened, monuments removed, and in sufficient time, slurs such as Redskins and Indians will be purged from the lexicon by owners who are not heroes, but billionaire businessmen with clenched teeth. This always was a complex subject for me as a columnist back in Chicago, where nicknames such as Blackhawks and Fighting Illini were hailed by the NHL franchise and the University of Illinois as proud nicknames that honored Native Americans, and most of their fans agreed. Now maybe those same fans will put down their beers and think a little bit. For decades, pro franchises with contentious names have looked the other way, impervious to heat and ultra-protective of valuations linked to tradition and market size. Much as Snyder is loathed Much as his team has been a bust through most of his 21 years as the owner, the Redskins have been financial winners, currently worth $3.1 billion, ranking 14th among the world's most valuable sports teams and 5th in NFL circles. But growth has flatlined as the Redskins struggle in their aging stadium in Maryland, and Snyder needed a game changer in his front office. I doubt he was shrewd enough to realize Ron Rivera might transform his life and his franchise's shaky standing in America when, back in January, Snyder hired Rivera as head coach. But even if he doesn't win much, and as long as Snyder is the owner, those fortunes likely won't improve, Rivera will be remembered as the pioneer who gave vision to a blind boss and urged him to sandblast the nickname. Of Mexican and Puerto Rican descent, Rivera is the NFL's only Hispanic head coach and one of only 4 league head coaches of color. When the latest dump Redskins avalanche came after George Floyd's death, Snyder couldn't have had a better in-house ally than Rivera, the son of an Army officer who grew up on military bases. At his introductory news conference, Rivera said the nickname issue, quote, is of personal importance to me, end quote, adding that he looked forward to working with Snyder, quote, to make sure we continue the mission of honoring and supporting Native Americans and our military, end quote. That's why people think it's going to be Warriors. Again, you don't want to start another flap with Warriors. But I think military is the way we're going here. After all, District of Columbia, nation's capital. What's fascinating is how Rivera spent part of his formative years in the Washington area and became a Redskins fan. He also loved the nickname. He said it was hard to fathom that it was a racist thing in any way, to use his words. But, quote, now putting it in perspective, there's been a change. My eyes are wide open, end quote. At least Rivera acknowledges it, such as the reckoning of the year 2020. Because the Indians are based in Cleveland and not immersed in the politics and media swarm of the nation's capital, their ownership group hasn't been scrutinized nationally like Snyder. Only last year did the team finally remove the stereotypical cartoonish red-faced Chief Wahoo from its uniforms and caps. Will the Indians, after 105 years, finally seek a new nickname as well? Or will they continue to bow to pressure from traditionalists and racists? This time they sound real. Quote, we are committed to engaging our community and appropriate stakeholders to determine the best path forward with regard to our team name, the team said in a statement. Consider it an incremental pushing of a story to its inevitable rightful end. We just saw it with the Redskins. I think you're going to see it with the Indians. Major League Baseball, mired in a diversity crisis on all levels, cannot afford to dawdle. That also applies to the Atlanta Braves, who ditched their urban ballpark for white suburbia 3 years ago and still don't view their nickname as offensive. They are looking into the accompanying tomahawk chop. Wasn't it just last October when Cardinals pitcher Ryan Helsley, a member of the Cherokee Nation, was critical of that chant? And then the next day, the next postseason game, the Braves did not distribute those red foam tomahawks that those fans have waved for decades in the state of Georgia. Okay, so they say they're going to work on the chop. Why not work on the nickname while you're at it? If they can take that step, the Braves certainly should embark on a more monumental social mission. For now, they say the team, quote, honors, supports, and values the Native American community. That will never change, end quote. Meaning, the name won't change. Come and get us, they're saying. So, Braves and Blackhawks, those nicknames are still acceptable when Redskins and Indians are not. We're going to purge those names and keep the others. Look, this is no time to prolong the justification game. When Daniel Snyder, of all people, can take a jackhammer to the word never in caps, anybody can and should. 4 months ago, just after Rudy Gobert tested positive for coronavirus and shut down the NBA and then sports in America, I said this on a podcast. Stop the delusion. Sports as we know it is finished. Well, was I wrong? A freakish baseball season is doomed to fits and starts and opt-outs and testing debacles involving, get this, a converted PED lab. The NBA's Disney World bubble is one J.R. Smith after-hours sneak out from mass infection, right? Hockey is very wise to flee the U.S. virus jungle, yet Canada will not be stopping players from spraying particles and Brad Marchand from spitting on opponents. Remember, he goes, and football? Whoever thought there could be a football season anyway? The last few days finally brought an awakening or a reckoning that America should find something else to do this autumn. The words dreaded by millions, and I'm quoting, "We are running out of time," unquote, were uttered by none other than Greg Sankey, the commissioner of the Southeastern Conference, from the very sector of a mask-politicized nation that still thinks COVID-19 is the flu and that football is bigger than God and disease. But what's happening now is an incremental series of heads-up acknowledgments, soon to include the chiefs of all five power conferences, that college football very likely will not be playing in 2020. After months of denial, even the truthers realize that people do get sick from this virus, and they do die, and that athletes are not the only ones testing positive. Arizona Cardinals owner Michael Bidwell and Pac-12 boss Larry Scott are among the infected. This sweeping reality eventually will be adopted by various NFL megalomaniacs, from Jerry Jones to Roger Goodell to Tom Brady to broadcasting executives, once they recognize that they, too, stand no collective chance whatsoever against the virus. Hard to believe, I know, but that's true. Never mind the 136,000 deaths, the 5,000 fatalities over the last week in this country, the record U.S. caseloads, the numb fact that many more people on this earth will be saying goodbye before the pandemic does. Football had to wobble for reality to kick in, and America is not handling it well at all. Baseball, come on, it's background noise when Sonos isn't working and Alexa has laryngitis. The NBA, it's a social media opiate. Less sport than glitz and snark entertainment. Golf is a joy with Tiger Woods, and we get him back very soon. It's meh without him. And soccer and auto racing are niche itches. I should copyright that. Niche itches. The American soul would be dented without all of them, but hardly totaled. However, an autumn without football, to hear the anguish out there, the absence of pro and college games would prompt the masses to run into the nearest body of water and never come back. I don't get it. For the life of me, and life is intended literally here, being in a pandemic and all, it's baffling why reasonable people cannot grasp the obvious. To play football without a vaccine is to invite the coronavirus to blitz unblocked from the blind side, an opportunity for massive outbreaks and spreads in a country already bombarded by enough of them. The line of scrimmage, as I've been saying, might as well be renamed the Petri dish, with sweating, panting, bleeding, and call-shouting men within inches of each other before the ball is snapped, followed by maniacal blocking, grunting, running, tackling, and trash-talking. Then they head to the confined spaces of locker rooms, indoors, mind you, where COVID-19 might as well pitch tents in stadiums for months throughout the land. Other than rugby, UFC, which is a lost cause, and the kiss cam, yes, the kiss cam, no sporting endeavor is less conducive to safety and wellness than football. And it's unconscionable to think that the powers that be would ask players to assume such dangers. I keep going back to Sean McVay's quote, the LA Rams coach. He said, while publicizing that HBO Hard Knocks series, also on the endangered list, and I'm quoting McVay, I should do the McVay voice, we're going to social distance, but we play football. It's really hard for me to understand all this. That was pretty good. Sean McVay. He's right, though. Denial sweeps the nation anyway. Fans need their controlled violence, their beloved teams and schools, their fantasy teams, their more serious gambling action. And the broadcast networks, they don't seem to care how many people fall ill in a trigger effect of playing football because they're petrified by the devastating financial consequences if a $15 billion NFL season and a $4 billion college season are lost. Would Fox Sports maybe pull the plug on ailing FS1 without football? How many of those daily ESPN shows would be shelved without football? What would those networks air without football? Remember, America thrives on football like no other show business genre, including Hollywood, Broadway, and music. Even amid the cord-cutting and fragmentation of the TV industry, 41 of the top 50 telecasts in the U.S. last year were NFL-related. And that appetite hasn't waned during the lockdowns and isolation of a paralyzing health crisis. It only has become more ravenous. The NFL news cycle has thundered on as if the pandemic doesn't exist. Brady, joined by Rob Gronkowski, thumbing his nose at Bill Belichick from Tampa and believing that his TB12 lifestyle is actually bigger than the virus. Cam Newton, on the cheap, seeking revenge in New England until Belichick probably orders him to stop the post-game fashion show. Patrick Mahomes, young enough to be Brady's kid, look it up, already the king of sports and NFL compensation before his 25th birthday. Turn on any sports talk station and the hosts are not focusing on the pandemic or the new round of social activism, though they should be. They're talking NFL and Power 5, baby. The rationale is this. If football can get through a concussion crisis, a barrage of off-the-field conduct problems, and a Colin Kaepernick protest movement about to return with a furious vengeance, and rightfully so, why can't it plow through a pandemic? And it's not just the fans and the media networks embracing that mindset, but football men on the pro and collegiate levels, ego-driven warriors who believe it's their life mission and duty to take on this infectious disease and beat it down. Well, you know what? I have a news flash for all of the aforementioned. COVID-19 is invincible. Shakable only by a vaccine or a cure, it can wipe out a position group, a locker room, a community, a league. And if football isn't careful, it might not recover from the resulting massacre. You have to love Richard Sherman, who quickly pointed out the absurd hypocrisy of the NFL's new post-game policy. Players are now banned from swapping jerseys and interacting within 6 feet of each other after the game. Said Sherman, this is a perfect example of NFL thinking in a nutshell. Players can go engage in a full contact game and do it safely. However, it's deemed unsafe for them to exchange jerseys after said game. End quote. Richard Sherman, that's exactly what I've been saying for months. He followed with three laughing emojis, but he knows nothing is funny here. The NFL is treating players like pieces of meat. Risk your life for 3 hours on a field, then get your asses straight home afterward so you can risk your lives the next week. But no socializing after the game. Which is why the season is jeopardized not only by COVID-19, but the NFL's arrogant proposal to, hold 35%. 35% of player salaries in escrow. If that mirrors the strategy of Major League Baseball owners who actually cried poor during their public tiff with the Players Association, brace for yet another round of depressing labor talks in the coming days. Now, at the very least, the NFL should be providing daily coronavirus tests, given these proximity issues inherent to the sport. Nope! The NFL, with all of its wealth, wants testing every other day. Oh my God, is that crooked? Though, get this, the NFL will provide face shields to minimize spread during games, which J.J. Watt, among many players uncommitted to playing, says could lead to obvious breathing and glare and fog problems under that mask shield. said Sherman, huge outstanding issues are still unresolved, unquote. And of course, the San Francisco cornerback is also a committee member of the NFLPA. So, why play? The answer, and the wrong one, the corrupt one, is money. The powers that be are so blinded by the horror of lost billions that they have deprioritized the health risks for players. College football has tried to hold on as long as possible, riding the indifference in politics surrounding this virus in certain geographical pockets. Florida. Hello, Florida. You figuring it out by now, huh? You get it? Common sense and human decency finally seem to be prevailing, I think. Seasons cannot proceed when fraught with health risks, especially for a college player who receives a humble stipend, room, and board, but otherwise is not paid. Imagine the potential for spread when players in daily close contact during games and practices venture onto campuses that do allow student bodies. Right now, a lot of them are intending to have students in the fall. Imagine the football players joining those students in one COVID-19 festival. Also consider the alarming rise of the coronavirus cases in fraternity houses where players tend to party. This explains why southern states filled with people inclined to view the virus as a hoax are being required to wear masks. Oh my God, masks. Amid the rising death toll. And it's why Sankey, in an ESPN radio interview, said his level of concern is high to very high about a season ever starting. Here was Sankey, who met Monday with SEC athletic directors.
High to very high. I look at the numbers every day, and the important issue is not just numbers, it is trying to understand and comprehend, and that's where literally you want experts moving you away from the scroll or the titles at the bottom of a TV screen or the interviews of this expert or that, and find people. And we put a medical advisory group together in early April with the question of what do we have to do to get back to activity? And they've been a big part of the conversation. But the direct reality is not good.
Sankey wouldn't come out and say it, so I will. The COVIDiots who haven't worn masks have sabotaged football. Big Ten Commissioner Kevin Warren also sounded ominous thoughts.
One thing we have to realize that this is not a fait accompli that we're going to have sports in the fall. We may not have sports in the fall. We may not have a college football season in the Big Ten.
At least NFL players will be paid for their roulette game if they do play. But if the MLB season is vulnerable to players opting out, Roger Goodell should prepare for a mass exodus in his sport, assuming many players show up at all. One skeptic is Donovan Smith, who, as the starting left tackle of the Buccaneers, is responsible for the blind side of you-know-who, Brady. Quoting Smith from Instagram, the unfortunate events of the COVID-19 pandemic have put a halt to a lot of things. Football is not one. To continue discussing the many unknowns do not give me comfort. Risking my health as well as my family's health does not seem like a risk worth taking. With my first child due in 3 weeks, I can't help but think about how I will be able to go to work and take proper precautions around 80 plus people every day and then go home to be with my newborn daughter. How can a sport that requires physical contact on every snap and transferal of all types of bodily fluid every single play, all caps, practice safe social distancing. I love this guy. How can I make sure that I don't bring COVID-19 back to my household? Yes, we can get tested every day. That's not happening. But if it takes 24 hours to get my results, how can I know each day that I am not spreading this virus or contracting it? Amen to Mr. Smith. Deal with it, Tom Brady. Your ass is going to get sacked 70 times. 43-year-old ass. But they're not playing a season. Yet for every thoughtful commentary, there is lunacy from the likes of college coaching legend Lou Holtz. Haven't heard from Lou in a while. He emerged from the cobwebs to go on with Laura Ingraham on Fox News. And Lou had a curious plea. Play the season, risks be damned.
The way it is right now, they just don't want to have sports. And there's no way in this world you can do anything in this world without a risk. People stored Normandy. I took some grandchildren over there. They knew there was going to be cash. They knew there were going to be risks, but it was a way of life.
That is, Lou, until a way of life becomes a way of death. They say audio reading is the new way to explore a book, so here is my latest column from the Barrett Sports Media site titled, Shamed by Activism, ESPN Must Remove Woj from NBA Beat. Whoa. This is what happens when a sports network, ESPN, encourages on-air personalities to become political rabble-rousers. A Woj bomb detonates and creates more cracks in the American divide. Astonishingly, a media company owned by Fuzzy Wuzzy Walt Disney Company and once known for blooper videos and Chris Berman's cornballish puns now might be perceived as a supporter of China's communist government and a non-supporter of U.S. law enforcement. All thanks to Adrian Wojnarowski, who should stick to trade gossip the next time he wants to fire a public FU at a senator. I'm pretty sure the network's ubiquitous NBA reporting insider, and for that matter, Stephen A. Smith, Max Kellerman, and the rest, are no more equipped to speak out on ultra-sensitive social matters than Goofy and Donald Duck. But once their Disney bosses unleashed ESPN activism fever amid the heat of 2020 America in a summer of weak ratings and minimal live sports programming in pandemic-broken Bristol, the policy change was bound to turn ugly and disgraceful. And it has. In this case, the shame goes beyond the obvious sin of Wojnarowski's knee-jerk response to Senator Josh Hawley, Republican, Missouri, who had criticized the NBA for its relationship with China in a Friday news release. Hawley wanted to know why the league was allowing players to wear jersey slogans supporting social justice if and when the season resumes in that Disney World bubble. Some of those slogans, Black Lives Matter, I Can't Breathe, Vote, among other choices, while not, said Hawley, providing options that criticize China or defend U.S. police forces. All of that coming from Senator Josh Hawley. Only Wojnarowski can explain what got into him. He has been working like a slave since March 11, the night Rudy Gobert's positive coronavirus test shut down the league and, in sequence, sports in America, straining for months to tackle questions that had no answers. He looked exhausted on his weeknight SportsCenter appearances. ESPN tends to do this to many of its prominent people, overextending and exposing them to mistakes born of fatigue, recalling Stephen A. Smith's flurry of factual errors a year ago. That said, there is no excusing Wojnarowski for responding to the release thusly in an email to Hawley's press office. F you. Except he didn't include the dashes. Seizing an opportunity to extract mass attention for himself and his causes, Hawley posted the profane two-word Woj screenshot on Twitter, adding, quote, don't criticize hashtag China or express support for law enforcement to at ESPN. It makes them real mad, end quote, the senator. Wojnarowski tried to apologize directly to Hawley without success and then expressed the right things in a tweet, quote, I was disrespectful and I made a regrettable mistake. I'm sorry for the way I handled myself, end quote, Adrian Wojnarowski. But the damage was done. ESPN suspended Wojnarowski for 2 weeks without pay and delayed his assignment to the Disney bubble, which represents a stunning upbraiding of the media sensation known simply as Woj in the social media sphere and among his network brethren. Said ESPN in a statement, quote, "This is completely unacceptable behavior and we do not condone it. It is inexcusable for anybody working for ESPN to respond in the way Adrian did to Senator Hawley," end quote. The senator will get over it. Journalism will not. And by the way, a Mariotti aside, ESPN only suspending him for 2 weeks. That's a slap on the wrist. Now he doesn't get paid. Adrian gets a lot of money. But I think that's kind of a nod to the NBA and exactly what I'm about to talk about right here. Because as I said, the senator will get over it. Journalism will not. There's no journalism here. My takeaway from all of this isn't so much the FU. It's what that FU says about Wojnarowski's relationship with the league he covers. To respond the way he did to a delicate social issue suggests that he is way too emotionally invested in the NBA, maybe from the commissioner's office on down. A reporting relationship that ESPN has enabled, if not requested, wink, wink, thanks to its 9-year, $24 billion rights deal with the league. After years as a sports columnist at a New Jersey newspaper, Wojnarowski moved to the Yahoo Sports site and cultivated a network of NBA sources, general managers, coaches, players, agents, that coincided with the rise of social media. He became Woj, king of the Woj bombs, the frequent news scoops that drove massive traffic to his platforms. It was natural for ESPN to steal him from Yahoo Sports. What isn't natural, or the least bit professional, is his desire to take pro-NBA political stances. What are you doing? China is a particular flashpoint, of course, with the league losing a reported $200 million, probably more, in Chinese-related media revenue after, you remember this, that explosive tweet last fall by Houston Rockets general manager Daryl Morey, who supported a Hong Kong protest movement against the Chinese government. Now, ESPN should have taken action when Wojnarowski liked Morey's tweet at the time. By ignoring it, bosses Bob Iger and Jimmy Pitaro allowed FU to enter Woj's brainstream last Friday. He reportedly will return to work inside the Orlando bubble after his suspension. I have a better and smarter idea. A lot of people in my industry will not like it, but the purists will. Remove Wojnarowski from the beat immediately and entirely. Get him out of there. What good is his reporting prowess if he is so embedded with the league, so protective of the league he covers, the people he covers, that he damages the credibility of the company that pays him? We are here to cover sports, not be part of sports. And it's obvious a reporter who makes millions of dollars has allowed his professional judgment to be clouded. Once, back when journalistic standards mattered, sports editors routinely would make reporters swap beats after 3, 4, 5 years to make sure they weren't becoming too cozy with their sources and the coverage becomes too predictable. Woj isn't just cozy. He is literally in bed with the NBA, with the agents, with the GMs, with the coaches, with the commissioner, in bed with all of them. So how about testing the comfort zones of Wojnarowski and NFL insider Adam Schefter, who has done some NBA sideline work, and have them swap beats? Shocking, right? What? What did he just say? Swap beats? What? Yeah, they're both too cozy with their leagues. Schefter not as much as Wojnarowski, but it's too easy for them. Schefter just sits there and waits for his phone to light up. Oh, scoop. And Woj, it's worse because he's now like writing senators. FU. FU, Woj. You know, what are you doing? I've known Woj forever. What are you doing? What? Power freak or just exhausted or both? And more evidence that Woj is in too deep here comes from players who are defending him in a free Woj hashtag campaign, including LeBron James. Also, the Clippers' Lou Williams, who tweeted, quote, "A free Woj, man." I don't know what that means. Only Lou does. And Clippers teammate Patrick Beverley, who tweeted two prayer emojis. They are praying for Woj. All anybody in sports ever wanted to do to me is kill me, the way it should be, by the way. But such is the state of sports journalism today, ESPN style. Woj bombs. Wasn't it just last week when I scolded the honchos Iger and Pitaro for their sudden re-embrace of social activism after declaring the network a no-politics zone 2 years ago? This allowed Stephen A. Smith to say this about Trump the other day, again on a sports network.
But what we will say, and what's easy to say, is that his behavior comes across as highly, highly insensitive. And he might be utilizing it for political means because he's feeding his base the fodder that it needs to remind him, to remind them that he's with them and whatever. But all it does is really put on display and illuminate the divide that exists in this nation. And it's something that he's feeding off of for his own individual purposes. Make no mistake about it. And if you're a Daniel Snyder, for example, and you use the word never to talk about how you would never change the Redskins' name back in 2013 and then again in 2014. It's easy if there's a whole bunch of people out there who think like this president at least wants to disseminate that he thinks like and say, you know what, I can hold on to this because it's not going to affect my bottom line. Because with Daniel Snyder, it was about the money. But it's one of the reasons why we consistently have pointed out, particularly over the last several weeks, Dominique, that it's not enough to not be a racist. You've got to be an anti-racist. You got to stick out your check and embolden yourself and speak proudly against racist behavior, racist activities, racist legislation, racist policies, and the like. You have to be able to do that, because if you don't do that, then all of a sudden somebody like this man, our president, will go out there and disseminate the kind of messages that leads to a divide.
Think about it. If Stephen A. isn't ripping on President Trump and Kellerman doesn't want a piece of Deshaun Jackson last week, maybe Woj doesn't drop the biggest bomb yet on a network so ravaged by self-destruction that it's barely recognizable. Now it's time for The Buzz, our regular deep dive into sports and life, mostly life these days. Chris joining the program. Chris, this is the day we never thought we would see. Washington Redskins, no more. Your thoughts?
You know, Jay, it felt like that half-hearted sorry, that a half-hearted apology you give somebody when you don't really want to apologize and you're really not sorry, but you just want to make them feel better and you maybe just want the argument to go away. That's how this felt. You know, it's a multi-billion dollar team. Daniel Snyder is a billionaire. The NFL is a multi-billion dollar sport, as we know. And this has been coming for a while. And yet, it's just sort of that statement on a Monday morning. Yeah, you got us. I mean, they didn't say that, but it felt like that. Like, okay, fine. Here's what you want. A little statement that says we're going to retire the logo and the name. There's no new name. There's no new logo, which could have easily been come up with. It could have been a big rollout this morning, a press conference. You see the new logo. Everyone feels a little bit better. This sort of feels like, yeah, here you go, guys. You wanted this. Here you go. I don't know. And again, I like to bring this up. Why? How does this help? We've gotten rid of the Redskins name, something that was insensitive, as we know, to many people. But how has that actually gotten the situation better in this country, which started all this, which was, a man was literally lynched by four police officers for 8 minutes and 46 seconds. Are we taking any steps to actually change that? No, we changed the name of a football team. Good.
Chris, you heard the SEC and Big Ten commissioners expressing grave doubts about playing football in 2020. I know you've been hoping and praying about the resumption of football, but considering that the lines of scrimmage and locker rooms are petri dishes, at what point are you going to give up and say uncle to COVID-19.
You know, Jay, I'll give up and say uncle to COVID-19 when there's actually some transparency in what's going on. Any human being that does a little bit of research, that spends maybe 10 minutes on the CDC website, which, again, we will say that the CDC is the only authentic information source, will see that the CDC now, what, about 20 days ago, said that they believe 25 million people have been infected with COVID-19. Obviously, that number is much higher than reported cases and reported deaths. So I'm simply saying, this is a virus that is out of control. Do I want to get it? Do I want my family getting it? No. There are people that I come in contact with every day that may have had it, that might have it. They're not getting tested. They work in the service community. They work in the retail community. I have to go to the grocery store. I have to go to Target. I have to go to these places. So all I'm saying is if people don't want to play, if athletes don't want to play, don't play. If a sport is actually happening and athletes are getting paid millions of dollars, that is their job. Just like the person working at Target or a restaurant that needs to make a living. The only reason, Jay, that we are talking about not playing sports is because the multimillionaire athletes don't have to play. They're not going to collapse. Okay, the billionaires aren't going to collapse. The networks even won't really collapse. They'll take a huge hit. But eventually it's going to hurt normal people. It's going to hurt people that need jobs, that need this to go on. So that is the issue, Jay. And for me, yeah, that is the issue. I want sports to resume because it's a business. So if we are sitting here going, oh my God, football games are petri dishes. So are grocery stores. So are Walmarts. So let's shut those down too. If we're willing to shut everything down, I'll go along with you. And maybe that's what we should have done in the get-go. Maybe Bill Gates wasn't so crazy when he said shut the entire country down, everything, for 10 weeks. Maybe that was the way to go. Probably would have been a lot better than what we're dealing with now. As for college football, those athletes aren't paid. I mean, they are. But we digress. Those athletes are athletes. They're amateurs. They're kids. I've never thought that college sports would be played, nor should it, because, again, those men aren't getting paid millions of dollars.
And, Chris, somebody you know well, Adrian Wojnarowski, just dropped a Woj bomb that wounded ESPN's journalistic credibility, assuming ESPN still has any. Is it time for the network bosses to stop enabling social activism? And, Chris, is Woj, in going off the deep end with an F-bomb to a Missouri senator, revealing himself as being so embedded with the league he covers and those sources that ESPN should pull him off the beat entirely after his unpaid suspension is up in 2 weeks?
No, I don't think he should be pulled off entirely because people deserve a second chance. They deserve, you know, to apologize and be given another opportunity. What he did wasn't so egregious, in my opinion, that he deserves to lose his job. It wasn't smart. It wasn't wise. It wasn't what ESPN wanted. It wouldn't be what any of us would want exposed if we responded that way. But yeah, the lines have been blurred. And I do know Woj. You know Woj. Woj is somebody who is one of the best journalists out there in sports and has been for a long time. Credible, has always been respected. So yeah, he made a mistake. It does show the blurred lines of athletes and politics and be a part of an issue right now that a lot of people just don't want to deal with. There are a lot of people, and again, this is probably the problem with the polarized America right now. If you don't wear a face mask, or if you do wear a face mask, somehow that shows your political opinion, which it should have nothing to do. Now, if you don't want sports to involve politics, which is a normal feeling where you just want to turn on a baseball game or a football game and be left alone and escape, you now are an enemy, okay, or you have a certain political opinion. If you do want politics in sports, if you do want LeBron James to speak out on things, you're woke. You understand. Again, I am woke, quote unquote, to some things, and I am not woke to some other things. I think sports should be sports. It should be an escape. I should be able to watch something and not be bombarded with political statements. That's my opinion. Woj showed that there's a blurred line going on, not in just in the NBA, but in sports media, as we know.
Okay, thanks, Chris.
And now a final Mariotti commentary too hot for ESPN, too smart for the internet, and too chill for political activism. Take it away, Jay.
The game is sports versus the virus. Any other competition is wholly insignificant now that human rivals are united as allies and all strategies and tactics have been unleashed upon a killer pandemic. COVID-19 is the mightiest of dynasties, undefeated and prohibitively favored by Vegas sportsbooks to destroy, in order, Major League Baseball, the NBA, the NHL, college football, and in the final nuclear scene, an NFL behemoth that might look like King, and I don't even know how the hell you pronounce it, Ghidorah? This is where, Mariotti aside, this is where I can go and Google something when I'm looking for Godzilla's most recent battle, King Ghidorah. Is that how you pronounce it? Anyway, that might look like King Ghidorah after he was mauled by Godzilla. Got it? All right. A power sweep, this is terminology, new terminology, has become the hazmat level cleanup after each event, right? Power sweep. A double is the number of negative tests too necessary to escape MLB quarantine. A double. The pick and roll refers to an NBA player picking at the stale roll from his Disney World food tray. And I love this one. This is me patting myself on the back. Banging on a trash can is what the Astros will do when teammates are about to be Instagram outed at a crowded bar. Bang, bang, bang. And maintaining 6 feet of physical distance. Quote, that's how we guard anyways. End quote, said Coach Mike D'Antoni. I am slap happy. Managing a crack about the Houston Rockets' defensive challenges. Seriously now, this is the biggest story of a sports journalist's life, really? The audacity of this sports industry to defy the heavyweight champion of infectious disease? What a damned shame that only a few of us will be able to legitimately cover it. Because leagues must minimize the virus risks within extremely strict protocols, welcome to a new world of sports reporting via Zoom, in which traditional locker room access, of course, is long gone, and almost all credible media members will be relegated to asking questions via group streaming sessions while tethered to seating areas, assuming they do go to places like Orlando or to baseball press boxes, with far worse sight lines than the folks have watching at home. I would like to say this arrangement is temporary. In truth, it's the future. This is exactly what sports leagues have dreamed of, marginalizing and controlling the media while handpicking those who will remain obedient to the corporate cause. Hello, Woj! Except for the FU thing. Now that a new order has been established, think they'll ever return to the old way? No. Only those who pay lucrative rights fees, the broadcast networks, will have any chance of in-person interviews with athletes and coaches during this would-be sports reset. In the NBA's case, just 10 national scope reporters, not Woj, will be allowed post-game access in a socially distanced news conference, and literally at a price $550 a day in the Rudy Gobert Dome, that's what I'm calling it, with their news organizations ponying up for a hotel room, 3 daily meals, a once-a-day virus test, transportation to the gyms, and naturally a waiver form absolving the league of liability if a reporter contracts COVID-19. And make out that check, of course, to the Walt Disney Company, Walt Disney World, which means news outlets are paying ESPN for coverage capabilities when, I don't know, I thought reporters were supposed to be competing against ESPN. No, you're writing paychecks to ESPN. But don't write that to Woj. Oh, and if one of those 10 league-approved reporters is switched out for whatever reason, the news organization will have to pay an additional fee of $4,500. Why $4,500? Why not $40,000? All according to the Miami Herald and other media outlets that are reporting this. As for dozens of other reporters who do cover the league on a regular basis and need to follow the 22 teams in Orlando, they can attend games in something called Tier 2. They have to sit in some distant nether region, though they will have priority to ask questions via Zoom. Gee, oh boy. Some gig, right? Risk your life by flying to Florida, the bastard child of the American pandemic, and you still might have to call a buddy at home if you couldn't determine if a game-winning shot beat the buzzer. If our year from hell has changed life interminably, sports media have been reduced to the ranks of the utterly non-essential, with newspapers and websites on perpetual death watches, executives are faced with no-win decisions. Either spend money from ravaged budgets to pseudo-cover these games, or don't cover them and risk losing readers accustomed to up-close and personal sports coverage. Specifically, how can The Athletic, maybe the last gasp option for the sports writing craft, continue to charge $59 a year in good conscience when its reporting no longer will be distinguishable from the free-of-charge digital norm? And football coverage, though the sport has little chance of operating this season, as I've already said, will be even flimsier when players are endangered by an in-your-face contact sport with lines of scrimmage and locker rooms lurking as coronavirus petri dishes. Media members obviously won't be allowed in the same county, much less anywhere near field level. A sports fan might be asking, why does a reporter need one-on-one access anyway? What's wrong with Zoom? Once leagues and teams are allowed to cultivate pack journalism, the likelihood of original reporting shrinks, and coverage takes on a homogenous look. The sports industry doesn't want fierce independence and media people. It wants yes robots who don't rabble-rouse or break damaging stories. For years, teams have relied on paid broadcasters to carry the public relations flag. But even they are being short-shrifted during these shortened seasons, with baseball announcers forced to call road games via remote from home ballparks or studios. As I've always feared, leagues ultimately will sell their product entirely through broadcast partners and also writers hired as promotional flacks, something I wouldn't even be able to do in my next lifetime. I wouldn't even know how to begin being a promotional flack. And then those broadcast partners and those flack writers will be controlled. All narratives and messages controlled by leagues and teams in the future. They realize the sports media industry is in chaotic freefall and smell an opportunity. This is the thanks we get for helping to popularize these sports and elevate them into multi-billion dollar colossuses. America is about to witness the most bizarre few weeks, if not months, in its sporting history. It's a story that requires large numbers of highly skilled, sophisticated journalists to make sure leagues are telling the truth and that lives are not being jeopardized by COVID-19. But based on the early hints, I'm not sensing sports in a pandemic will be covered as the story of a lifetime in these coming weeks. Look, I was doing my radio program when planes crashed into towers on 9/11. I watched grown men dive under press box tables during the Bay Area earthquake. Then I stayed for days covering the rubble. I was there in Greece when demonstrators threw rocks in protest of Colin Powell's trip to the Olympics. I thought I was going to get hit by rocks. I ducked, put my arms over my head, and then the rocks hit my arm. Yeah, I'd love to be at Disney World raising hell, but I think Mickey Mouse has a better chance than any reporter does, including Woj of Breaking News, which, of course, is by design. Sports wins, media lose. That's our show. Thanks to Mac Miller, no longer with us, for his musical contribution in the show open. For our producer and editor, Chris, I am Jay, reminding you to never, ever let anybody mute you in life.
Coming on tonight. Are you ready?
Hey.
Are you ready? Are you ready, ready?
We're ready!
Are you ready for some football? A Monday night party. Hey, just rockin' Randall Hank. Ready to get the good time started. We've got the teams on the field and we turned up the lights. All my rowdy friends are back for Monday night time.
Watch the kickoff as the game begins. Pretty cheerleaders and last minute wins. The screaming crowd and the linebackers stare. Scrambling quarterbacks and receivers in the air. Big hits are coming, the backs are cutting inside. Everybody turns it up Monday night.